we're going to do now, from this point on, when we look at this content, the names may change, but the underlying processes are all the same. This is a very powerful statement, because when you have pathokinesiology, same difference. The names may, to me, I don't have any mic on. I can put it on. Since we're such a small, intimate group, and this becomes very important. You can bring your dictionary tomorrow. You realize that, right? Okay. A book form, not electronic form. Okay? All right, now we're going to go on to the organ systems. When we talked about cardiovascular, pulmonary, renal, GI, well, it's not so much GI, but bone, joints, and so forth, that these are critical conditions that you're going to see in the vast majority of your patients over and over again. So we're going to go through the organ systems, but I've selected those that are very common to you're going to see all the time. And this becomes important to recognize this, and then understanding how one organ system can affect another organ system down the line. And that patient may come in because of an organ system somewhere else, but it's really pointing to the problem. And you always have to remember that clinically. And so this becomes important when we look at the cardiovascular system. As cardiovascular plumbers, and this is how you have to think of it, since you're going to go start cardiovascular physiology and respiratory physiology, right? I'm going to give you four tools. You give me any respiratory or cardiovascular problem, I can break it down to these four entities. That's it. That's all I really need to know. And the four variables is cardiovascular plumbers, pressure, volume, compliance, contractility. Those are the four. They're listed right on your slide. You don't even have, it's all in your syllabus. All you do is sit back and listen and think about your exam later on. Okay? It's all there. I put it on the slide. What you have to do is look at the entire circuit. Then you understand when we talk about certain diseases, what's going to happen to that circuit. This applies, these four tools as vascular plumbers apply to all blood vessels and the chambers of the heart, whether it's the left or right. Use the same four tools. You always have to remember this. So we talk about what cell injury are we trying to avoid? Hypoxia. Therefore, this circuit, anything that damages this circuit leads to what? Hypoxia. Bingo. That's it. No matter what the disease is, whatever you call it, it's going to lead eventually to hypoxia. Whether it involves the chambers of the heart, whether it involves the blood vessels. That's the underlying theme you always have to remember. What I'm going to do is now show you examples how this leads to hypoxia. And so this becomes very critical. It's going to be on the exam tomorrow. What form of cell injury do you think is going to be on the exam? Hypoxia. So we're going to review tomorrow, too, at the same time. The names may change, but the underlying processes are always the same. And this becomes a critical point. Just listen to the patient tomorrow and beyond, or later on today. When we think of the arterial side, it's high pressure. Why is it high pressure? Because you have to deliver what? Oxygen nutrients to tissue to avoid what form of cell injury? Hypoxia. I mean, this is what you're going to just have to drive that concept in over and over again. So how does it allow it to get perfusion? Here are the four variables. It has to have a high pressure. It has to have low compliance. In other words, stiffer, because I can't lose that kinetic energy if I impart it into the wall. So I've got to make it firmer. How do I make it firmer? I make it thicker because I have what in it? Smooth muscle cells. And if I have more smooth muscle cells, what happens to the ability to control compliance? Quite a bit, isn't it? Because then I can constrict it, and what happens to your blood pressure when I constrict it? Goes up. So it's trying to avoid what? Hypoxia. That's all you got to remember. Then you understand when we talk about diseases that weaken the high pressure system, we got issues in terms of it can blow out. We'll look at an example of atherosclerosis in this lecture. Another important, because it has higher contractility, it can navigate blood through the circuit. But what's also unique about this, the volume of blood in your intravascular space is less on the arterial side than the venous side. So the bulk of your volume is really in your veins. versus the arteries. There are good things about that and bad things. Because if you don't get enough perfusion, enough blood volume, what's going to happen to your pressure? Decrease, leading to hypoxia. You got it.
So there's lesser volume in veins?
No, I said arteries. No, I'm not saying veins. I said arteries. Because there's lesser volume, if you lose that volume in the arterial side, what happens to blood pressure? Leading to hypoxia. That's the key. You have to remember that clinically. Now we go on to the venous side. It has less smooth muscle cells, so it has less contractility compared to the arterial. But because it has a thinner wall, what happens to its compliance or stiffness? Its compliance goes up, and it's less stiff. Therefore, where do you think most of your volume occurs? Your veins, okay? It's deoxygenated blood. So it has a higher volume, has a higher compliance, lower contractility, and what's its pressure going to be? Low. Now, there's a problem with this. What disease we talked about? When you have this, you have decreased flow, decreased pressure. What is the biggest problem in veins? Thrombosis, exactly. Because what do you promote? Stasis of blood. Where do you get deep laying for thrombosis? That's in the lower extremities. Therefore, you're prone to it. So this system is prone to thrombosis. Compared to the arterial, why is the arterial side not prone to thrombosis? It's higher pressure and flow. Doesn't get a chance to bring all those clotting factors we talked about in fluid hemodynamic derangements. So you almost can predict what disease is where. If I had a structural weakness in the walls of a vessel, where would it show up on? The high pressure side or the low pressure side? High pressure, just common sense. So most of the diseases that occur are what vessels, do you think? Arteries, that's right. See, just by using these basic concepts, you can almost predict where diseases are going to occur without memorizing it. Just by thinking you're, as cardiovascular plumbers, what will occur. So we're going to look at some examples to illustrate this. So when we look at systemic blood vessels, we're going to look at it as an umbrella. We're just going to select a couple. First, the vast majority of disease occur on what side? The arterial side, because it's high pressure. It's vulnerable. So if I'm going to have a structural weakness, where am I going to see it first? On the high pressure side. And this becomes very important. So there are inflammatory diseases of the vessels. These are autoimmune diseases that destroy the vessel walls. And they go down all the way to the capillaries and venules, but they can be arterioles, muscular arteries, and elastic arteries. They're age-dependent, etiology is unknown, and you treat this primarily with what? Because this autoimmune disease, what drugs do you think these patients will be treated with? Steroids, you got it. That takes care of that category. We're not going to talk about that. The next disease is far more common than inflammatory, is degenerative diseases. So this is a chronic form of inflammation. You saw it in your cadavers. When you were older cadavers, a lot of them had atherosclerotic aortas or calcified. This is probably the most common disease that involves arteries. It is going to be hardening of the arteries. So this is a chronic condition. So what inflammatory cell that lives 620 days has to play an important role in this? Macrophages. Hypoxia and macrophages. The names may change, but the underlying process is always the same. So this is a chronic problem. This can be accelerated by risk factors. For example, atherosclerosis, we'll talk about hypercholesterolemia, diabetes, hypertension, smoking, obesity. If you eat pizza 3 times a day for 30 years, you're guaranteed atherosclerosis. Or eat tamales 3 times a day for 30 years. Or meat 3 times a day. So we're going to talk about this, so degenerative changes. Next is, because we have a high-pressure system, if we have local weakening, what's going to happen to the wall, 3 layers of the walls of the intima media? They can balloon out. What do we call that? An aneurysm. So where do you see aneurysms primarily? On which side, the low-pressure or high-pressure side, if you had to take a guess? High-pressure. You can almost anticipate it. As cardiovascular plumbers, you know exactly where the disease is going to occur. And so aneurysm can be due to many things. Infections, they can be due to atherosclerosis, which we're going to use that as an example. Degenerative change over decades can make weakening. A vasculitis, you have inflammation. And what do PMNs and macrophages contain? What enzymes? What are the vessel walls made out of? What molecules? Collagen and elastin. So what do you think the PMNs and macrophages have to contain that we've talked about over the last month and a half? Collagenase and elastase. Now what happens to structural weakness? Increases, you lead to aneurysms. So vasculitides, autoimmune disease can lead to inflammation, structural weakening, and therefore aneurysm. And like a balloon, if you blow up a balloon too large, what happens to it eventually? It pops, now you bleed to death as a consequence of a ruptured aneurysm, whether it's in the brain, whether it's your aorta, anywhere you have an aneurysm, you can burst it and then have problems. Aneurysms can go all the way down the capillaries. This is one of the reasons why diabetics have a high morbidity and mortality, because it really affects all their blood vessels down to the capillaries, and they get capillary aneurysms. That's why the most common cause of blindness in the United States is in adults is what? Diabetes. Most common chronic form of renal failure is diabetes. The most common form of amputation of lower extremities due to non-traumatic cause? Diabetes. It's a vascular disease due to uncontrolled glucose. And so there are all these conditions that are eventually going to lead to hypoxia. And so when it affects these various structures, it's important to put this in the framework. You're going to listen, you'll come across odd vascular disease, but I'm giving you an overview and then specific example to illustrate the complications in a high pressure system. Because the arteries, you've learned this anatomy, you saw the variation in your bodies. We're unique also when we look on the outside, we're also unique on the inside. One of the vessels that can be malformed are arteries, where some of you may have a two renal arteries coming off your kidney to supply it. You don't know it, you're working fine. What do you care, right? But we're all unique. One of the places you get malformations, it could be in the organ system that has a lot of blood vessel formation and regression and formation of this organ system is the CNS. That's why you hear about these soccer players. It could be a girl or boy playing soccer that all of a sudden in the middle of a soccer play, they collapse and they die. There's two things when somebody collapses. There's two organ systems you think of right away. One is the cardiovascular system, the heart, and the CNS. When anybody collapses, those are the two things. And it's usually be due to what form of cell injury? Hypoxia. Okay? So you hear these young people dying and you wonder what's happening. One of the things you have to look for is a malformation in one of their cerebral vessels that burst and they died of acute subarachnoid hemorrhage or intraparenchymal hemorrhage. No one knows they have it until they get enough pressure. And if they're weakened structurally, it's a high pressure system. Where does 30% of your cardiac output go to? The brain. So it wouldn't take much. Then disease of veins. What's the biggest problem with veins? They stretch. So what's the big thing that people stretch? What do we call stretched out veins? Varicosities, varicose veins. Especially when you think of the lower extremities. We talked about this. Higher pressure, hydrostatic pressure, higher compliance. The valves are going to be dysfunctional and promote not only varicose veins, but thrombosis as a consequence to this. And phlebo means what? No. Phlebo. I have a phlebotomist. Veins. Phlebo. Remember what book is required for this course? That's right. There's a reason. Half the battle of medicine, no matter what facet, as physical therapist, you got to look up these terms. They're coming at you fast and furious. I'm sure there's a lot of new terms in the pathokinesiology, right? Well, got to look it up. In any of your classes, this becomes important. The last thing that occurs in blood vessels are tumors. The vast majority of tumors that arise from blood vessels are, what do you think, benign or malignant? If you had to take a guess. No, benign. What's the most common tumors found in humans? Benign or malignant? Benign. Moles. And including hemangiomas. Remember the same principle we talked about? Do most benign tumors become malignant? No, see that same principle. We just use it different organ systems. Okay? So hemangiomas, how many people have seen babies with little red marks on their faces or their arms or their chest? You ever see those? I guess you got to look at more babies. And these are called strawberry marks because they're red. These are called congenital hemangiomas. And what do you do with these? Absolutely nothing. They regress spontaneously. So this is an overview of the entire cardiovascular system on one slide. I love one slide. You know why? Because I want to see the forest. Then I use my four tools, which are what? Pressure, volume, contractility, and the C word, compliance. This is all you need. You give me any cardiovascular problem, I just need those four variables, and I can dissect it down to its essence. Whatever you want to give me, doesn't matter. So we're going to talk about arterial sclerosis, hardening of the arteries. This is where we're going to spend the rest of this time. It's all in your syllabus. What does sclerosis mean? Hardening due to what? What tissue makes tissues harder? Collagen. So this is another name for fibrosis. Sclerosis, fibrosis, and it's affecting what structure? Arteries. That's right. The key is, this is the wonderful thing about medicine. It's descriptive. It gives away the answer. If the patient or the situation in the fit, you can't call it, can you? The terms describe the process. So it's hardening the arteries or sclerosis or hard because of fibrosis. There are three types or three flavors. Like going to Baskin Robbins, you know you're going to get ice cream. In this case, here are the three flavors for arterial sclerosis. One we're going to talk about is atherosclerosis. This affects the muscular and elastic arteries. This is what you saw in your gross cadavers. And it becomes athero, means soft, kilo, hard, because you're going to get these plaques that it starts out to be hard and initially, and then it degenerates, becomes soft and mushy. And it's a disease of the intima, and it affects both the muscular and elastic arteries. That's how you think of it. It doesn't affect your arterioles or capillaries. Another one type is called medial calcification or muscular sclerosis. This affects muscular arteries only. This is an age-dependent problem that can occur. Now, this doesn't cause any clinical symptoms, except it's going to if I add calcification to the wall of an artery, what's going to have to do is compliance. Decrease. It's going to make it stiffer is another way looking at it. So if I had it throughout my entire cardiovascular arteries were all calcified, what would happen to my blood pressure in a patient that had calcified arteries? So you'd have hypertension. So one of the causes of hypertension can be damage to your vessels that make them what? Less compliant. And so this is a problem. So you can work out diseases just by thinking of these four variables. And it doesn't affect the intima where atherosclerosis does. Now another disease that we have to be concerned about is a disease of the arterioles only. It's called arteriolosclerosis with an L-O in there versus arteriosclerosis, which is an umbrella term for all of this. And you'll notice this is degeneration of arterioles. This occurs due to simple aging. You have to remember, especially as physical therapists, you're talking about pathokinesiology. And you have to remember that biological tissues have, like all type of materials, wear out. No matter how healthy you are, no matter how many vitamins you take, just by using anything, what happens to it? It eventually wears out, doesn't it? So one of the things that happens to your blood pressure as you get older is it goes up. And it goes up because the arterioles become sclerotic just by simply aging. And that's why you're systolic and diastolic, because what happens to your compliance if your arterioles are becoming stiffer? What happens to your blood pressure? It goes up. And that's why you'll see an increase. If you were to monitor yourself and took blood pressure readings throughout your life, you'd notice it start to go up as a function of time. What are things that accelerate this? Hypertension, which occurs in one out of every three adults in the United States. One out of every three. If you're going to guarantee anybody anything, it's hypertension. Yes?
Back to the first one, you said that it starts off as hard plaques that turn into soft?
Yes, they degenerate. I'm going to go through that process. That's the disease we're going to talk. I'm just giving you sort of, we're drilling it down. Okay? Arteriosclerosis, what can accelerate? We said hypertension, diabetics. Now, if the wall of the arterial becomes thicker, what happens to perfusion? What happens to lumen if the wall becomes thicker and arterial? It gets smaller. What happens to perfusion? Decrease leading to? What form of cell injury? Hypoxia. And that's where diabetics get non-healing ulcers. That's why they have heart attacks, strokes, because or renal failure, because of hypoxic damage. And diabetes is a bad disease. How many people know anybody who has diabetes? Look at everybody in this audience can point to somebody. That's how common it is. And will you have to deal with this as physical therapy? Yes, guaranteed your money back. I have three members of my, maybe about a half dozen of my members of my family died of the complications of diabetes. So I can't afford to get it. Now this is a normal, just to review histology. There are three layers to a artery. The adventitia is the vasovasorum, you provide blood supply, and you have nerve, sympathetic tone coming in there because you have submucosal cells. Then the bulk of the artery, especially the elastic artery or the aorta, is the media. And you'll notice the nuclei are in what direction? Are they haphazard? No, they're in the same direction as a cross section, and these nuclei represent fibroblasts and smooth muscle cells. They're lining up like this because you can't see it, but there are elastic fibers going in that same direction. That's why they're lined up like a school. When I see a school of fish on National Geographic, that's what I think of. This is the media of an artery. Then you can see the intima. This is where atherosclerosis, this layer takes a hit from diabetics, because that sugar is going to damage that intima and damage those endothelial cells that we've talked about in terms of fluid and hemodynamic derangements and hemostasis. So they become traumatized because of that high blood pressure, smoking, too much glucose. That's the target. That's where it gets damaged. And that's where a disease like atherosclerosis begins, as well as being damaging it down to the arterioles and capillaries, and a disease like diabetes. This is to illustrate a patient who had claudication, where they had cramping of the muscle, of the gastrocnemius muscle in the lower extremity, because obviously when you are exercising or walking, you increase what? More oxygen nutrient demand. His, unfortunately, his popliteal artery, the lumen of his popliteal artery is this white dot right here. What do you think is going to happen to perfusion if you had that much going down your lower extremity at the level of the knee? Decrease. But how did he survive? His foot did not become gangrenous. What's unique about, since you've gone through the lower extremities during the summer, what's unique about the knee in terms of its circulation? There's a lot of collateral circulation. So his collateral circulation, as this is a disease of atherosclerosis, a disease of the intima, this took decades. So he was able to compensate for the lack of perfusion over a period of decades. But then it reached a critical point, even the collateral circulation couldn't give him enough, and that's where he got claudication, because he wasn't getting enough oxygen nutrients getting to his muscle, so the muscle went from what? Aerobic to anaerobic. Now what happens to lactic acid in that muscle? Increases. So what gets released within the store, what stores of ions are released that causes severe muscle contraction? Calcium. And that's why he's got claudication. Because of what's form of cell injury? Yo, hypoxia. And so this is what his popliteal artery looked like. Bad disease. There's the normal lumen. There's the lumen. And he also had monkey burks. He has bone. Is it normal to have bone in an artery? No, he had osseous metaplasia. He has monkey burks as well, or medial sclerosis. So he has really one hard artery. So he's got crossover, because remember, monkey burgers affects the muscular arteries, while atherosclerosis affects both the elastic and muscular arteries. On the exam, you're not going to be covered, there's only one entity per patient. But in the real world, what is it really like? Two or three or four at the same time. So just realize that when making exams for any course, they have to keep it straightforward. This is the arterioles. Here you can see this in the kidney of from a diabetic. Here you see the lumen right here, and you can see the walls thickened. And why does it thicken? is because if my hands now become two endothelial cells and I have high pressure, I'm going to, that high pressure in the arterial, normally low pressure, is going to separate them chronically. What's going to leak out are growth factors and nutrients into the wall, stimulating the fibroblasts to lay down collagen. What happens to wall thickness? It gets thicker. What happens to its lumen? It gets narrow. What happens to perfusion? Decrease, leading to hypoxia. See? Now, let's talk about atherosclerosis. It's a damage. It occurs, and you won't feel this until the consequences are at the end stage, unfortunately. The first thing that occurs, which is a form of reversible cell injury called yellow streaks or fatty streaks, and they represent lipid accumulating in the smooth muscle cells and intima cell of the endothelial cells of the intima. Is this reversible? Yes. And this can be due to hypertension. This can occur at birth if you have hypercholesterolemia, or it usually occurs in your 20s and teenage years. But it's still reversible. Let's go back. The next one, what happens is smooth muscle cells come from the media into the intima and form a lump or a swelling, oma. Remember, like tumor, a swelling. And it's basically soft. But it's soft, but it's also going to be firm because fibroblasts will start coming in. And it's yellow because you're still accumulating lipid. Is this reversible? Yes. This usually occurs in the second or third decade of life. Then what's going to happen is it becomes fibrotic cap. And in the center, it becomes really necrotic and dead. And it becomes calcified. Those are the cadavers you saw in your gross anatomy lab. Had that disease because they were what age? The cadavers in the 70s, 80s, 90s. So they had advanced atherosclerosis and they started in their 20s, or depending on what's going on. And so it's going to be white, fibrous, and it's got, and this is not reversible. It becomes calcified. This is not reversible. And this occurs in the fourth or fifth decade of life. So the complications, it can ulcerate, break apart. What clotting factor would like to bind to it? It's Hagman factor. It's looking what? For a substrate. Looking for collagen, for example, so you can lead to thrombosis and then infarction of the tissue, the brain, the heart, lose your lower extremity due to gangrene, aneurysms because your structure weaken and destroy the integrity, become necrotic, and then it can rupture. Remember that dissection I showed you in the gross anatomy lab at the arch of the aorta? That was due to atherosclerosis with a blood hit underneath the plaque and dissected in both directions. And it ruptured in his pericardial sac and died of cardiac tamponade. Okay. So this is the progression. Here we have a normal artery, the intima, media, and adventitia. There is the fatty streak. Then becomes a fibrofatty plaque where you get smooth muscle cells. And then it becomes now calcified, degenerates. You get a fibrous cap. And then what can happen? It can structurally damage the wall, thin it out, where it can burst at any place along the circuit. It can form an aneurysm. It can now lead to a thrombosis occurring on the surface of the plaque, like your coronary arteries, leading to a heart attack or an MI, myocardial infarct. Or it leads to chronic hypoxia to the tissue. And what do you think the tissue is going to replace it by? Scar tissue. And that's, is scarring reversible or irreversible? Irreversible. That can have your skin to your brain, to your heart, to your kidneys, to your GI tract, any structure that gets vessels, not to cartilage, obviously, because cartilage gets it by diffusion, its nutrients. This is what it looks like when we open an aorta at autopsy. These are, every time they show you an aorta, basically it's all an autopsy. So you're always opening the aorta, the most posterior structure running down your spine. You open it posteriorly, and the right is the right, and the left is the left. So when you look at this, you see lumen of arteries coming off. And if I draw a line right there, I can tell you with assurance that's where the diaphragm was, where the aorta was passing through it. Now, how can I tell with certainty? Because what's the first major vessel below the diaphragm that provides your stomach, your liver, and the first part of your intestine is the celiac trunk. Then right below that is the superior mesenteric artery that supplies the vast majority of your intestine from the small to the large. This is the right renal artery, left renal artery. Then you think of those 12 pairs of arteries. See right above that is the 12 posterior intercostal arteries supplying each of your costal grooves and your anterior and posterior chest walls. So I can look at the aorta and know exactly where I'm at. Then you can see down here, these are the lumbical arteries coming off of the lumbar area. And then here's the inferior mesenteric artery taking care of the descending colon, sigmoid colon, and the upper part of the rectum. So this is what it looks like. And when you look at it, you'll notice there's a celiac, superior mesenteric, the right renal artery, and these are the fatty streaks in yellow. That's what they look like. Are they reversible or irreversible form of cell injury?
Reversible,
that's right. So if you were getting them now at your age and whatever you're doing, behavior, everything would be fine. Now let's go 3 or 4 decades later. Does that look like a normal aorta? Looks like an old rusty pipe on the inside, doesn't it? There are people walking on Parnassus that have aortas that look just like that, and they don't feel it until the complications of thrombosis, aneurysm, or dissection. So if we go back and draw our line here, we notice right away that there's the diaphragm, and right below that, there's the fatty, that's what a fatty streak looks like. That's an atheroma, it's raised. These are two reversible. But is that, do you think that aorta below where the, that third yellow arrow, do you think that's reversible just looking at it? No, it's calcified, it's fibrotic, it's necrotic inside of it. And it can break off like a rusty pipe and send emboli showering to your organs. If this was your arch aorta, your common carotids to your brain, leading to transient ischemic attacks, for example, or infarction. This could go down to your kidneys and break off and cause emboli. And then you can see the common iliacs coming off here to left and right. So this is what these arteries look like. So histopathologic features, it's a chronic inflammatory condition involving macrophages. You're going to recruit fibroblasts to produce fibrous tissue. And then you'll get a degeneration. And you get these specialized smooth muscle cells coming and synthesizing collagen and lipid and cholesterol. They accumulate the cholesterol in these damaged areas. And then you get these smooth muscle cells that degenerate and become replaced with fibrous cap. So here's, you see the endothelial cells. And here's this migration of smooth muscle cells to the internal elastic lamina and making it a raised plaque or atheroma. But first it'll form fatty streaks. Here's a normal aorta. You see the intima and media. Now this is a old red O stain that makes the lipid red because it's just holes in it, and all that is the lipid. All that red on the intima is accumulation, which is what form of cell injury? Reversible or irreversible injury? Reversible. So as this localized collection of lipid necrotic debris forms, it's going to lead to narrowing of the lumen, depending on the size of your arteries, like your coronary arteries or cerebral vessels, leading to hypoxia. It can ulcerate, what like the form on that surface? A thrombus, lead to occlusion, leading to an infarct in the distribution of that artery. It can encroach on the media and make it structurally what? Weaker. And you're in a high-pressure system. Locally, what you can form is an aneurysm. Where all three layers dilate out, and if like a balloon, it could eventually do what? Burst or rupture is the way we would describe it. And rupture, and then you can also release atherosclerotic emboli, become embolic and leading to hypoxic damage distally in normal vessels. So here's what a plaque looks like raised. You can see the fibrous cap. This is the advanced cap that's not reversible. And that's the fibrous cap. Now, this is called the shoulder of the cap, what I'm pointing here. Now, when we think of a blood vessel and you got a plaque that's normally your vessel wall, blood is flowing across like this, right? Now, if I raise a plaque, what's that laminar flow? It's hitting that shoulder. So if I'm think of the blood, every time systolic pressure hits it, it's going to act like a chisel. So what can it do is now go underneath of this and split it like that gentleman that ruptured his aorta. Because he had that plaque and that blood was coming off at high pressure, coming out of his chambers of his left chamber of his heart, it was hitting that plaque until eventually it just went underneath of it and dissected. And it went both directions. And he didn't feel it until it got to the dissection where he probably had severe back pain. So it went underneath the plaque here, the shoulder. Here's the core that's necrotic. And this is what's left of the media. You can see it's structurally weakened because of this. There's the interface. That's where the dissection occurred in that patient I showed you. That separated the wall because it's now structural weak interface. Here's what it looks like. The cholesterol clefts accumulate. You see no nuclei. It's basically cellular debris. There's no way you can really get rid of it internally unless what they do, for example, in the carotids, they do endarterectomies where they bore it out, like boring out like Roto-Rooter in a pipe that's clogged up. And there's the interface between the base of the plaque and the media. Here's the elastic stain. There's the fibrous cap. There is the basically cellular debris, necrotic tissue. And then you see these black lines represents the elastic fibers. But as you get to the plaque, what do you notice about the black lines or elastic fibers? They're what? They're decreasing, aren't they? So what happens to structural integrity? Decreased. So this is just showing the H&E on one side. There's the fibrous, the base of the fibrous plaque, or the core of it, and there is the interface between the media, and then you can see the media down below. And you see the elastic fibers are lost as the plaque goes down and degenerates and destroys the media. Now, don't get a heart attack by looking at the slide. There's a point I want to make. What cell do you see at the very upper left-hand corner? Because this is a chronic condition. When I think of chronic condition or inflammation, what cell do I always think of? Macrophages. There it is. That's the most important. You notice that this is what? This is a silent disease. People don't feel this from the fatty streaks and atheromas. They only feel the consequences at the very end. And what's the unit of time this process takes? Decades. And that's the important thing. So you get fatty streaks, the atheroma, and then it becomes fibrotic, ulcerated. That's what we went through. And here in one slide shows you this scenario. There's the macrophage. There's the fatty streaks. There's the atheromatous change. And then you become the fibroatheroma lesion with lipid more, fibrotic. And then it becomes complicated and hemorrhage, dissection, aneurysm. So this is another way of looking at it, the progression over decades. The blue represent macrophages. This should be pink. And then you see it's getting into the intima. You got smooth muscle cells. You get a fatty streak and then an atheroma. And then at the very bottom is the complex plaque. But this occurs decades. It takes decades. And that's why you don't feel it. It's like hypertension. Let's look at some of the complications. If I have vessels coming off the aorta that has atherosclerosis, what happens to the lumen? Decrease. What happened to the left kidney? What change? What cellular adaptation happened to the kidney? Atrophy, because it's a lot what? Smaller. Because what was the atrophy due to? What form of cell injury was that kidney experiencing for decades? Hypoxia. See how easy that was? The names may change, but the underlying processes are the same. And then what happened to the other kidney? It had to compensate for the loss of the other kidney, so what did it do? Either adapt. There you go. See? You guys are ready to take the exam now. Want to get rid of it? They're all printed up. No? If you want a night, okay. Too late. Here's another problem. Here's the abdominal aorta, and on its surface, what do we see? There's the superior mesenteric artery, the right renal artery, and then we see thrombi. Because what clotting factor would like to bind to it? Factor 12. It's contact sensitive. It has a substrate to bind to it. And that's why it leads to thrombosis. So if people have known atherosclerosis, what do they take as a drug to keep a thrombus away? A baby aspirin a day keeps the thrombus away. Because it acetylates the platelets, so they can't form a hemostatic plug. See? Here we see an abdominal aneurysm, and you see there's the right renal artery, and you can see how ballooned out it is. If you have a patient with abdominal aneurysm, they can become thrombosed off because you have a problem of blood flow, you get states of blood, or you see a pulsatile mass. You can actually see the abdomen going like this. You see a mass. And you can actually put your stethoscope stethoscope into it, and you can listen to what is called a Bruey. When you think of laminar flow, you have concentric circles of highest velocity to center. If I alter that flow by squeezing it, remember when you're kids, when playing with a hose, and when you squeeze the hose, you heard all that turbulence? That's a Bruey. You didn't realize that, but that's a Bruey. You're causing turbulence. If you get an aneurysm locally, it'll disturb that laminar flow and give you a rumbling sound. That's called a Bruey. And a Bruey is a rumbling. It's a warning that laminar flow has been altered because of narrowing or because of an aneurysm, because you altered the flow. If you want to play with this, just get a hose, squeeze it, put a stethoscope, and listen to it. It's very interesting. Here's atherosclerotic emboli. Here is the kidney. We have a renal, small renal artery, and we see atherosclerotic plaque with cholesterol clefts. Completely occluding it, lead to hypoxia, infarct. So let's go through the risk factors, age and sex. It tends to be more common in males than females. What are the risk factors? Diabetes mellitus, damaging the intima, too much sugar, too much lipid, hypercholesterolemia, damaging the intima. Hypertension of all these risk factors is the most important because the constant barrel trauma of your blood pressure hitting it and damaging. Yes.
So you said that hypertension can cause atherosclerosis, but also atherosclerosis causes hypertension.
No, right. It could, depending upon what vessels are involved and how the distribution. If it involved all your vessels with atherosclerosis, you lead to hypertension. But it tends to occur certain distribution, not all the vessels. So it depends on the situation, what's going on. Another one is smoking. It's going to be interesting when people legalize marijuana smoking. It can increase the risk for atherosclerosis if you smoke weed for 40 years. Yeah. You can be smoking your underwear. It doesn't matter what you smoke, really, because you've got all these toxins. Do you think vaping could cause atherosclerosis? Absolutely. You make carcinogens, you make formaldehyde when you vape. I don't think formaldehyde would be very conducive to your intimal cells. And then obesity, because what happens to your blood pressure when you have obesity? It goes up, and you got diabetes on top of it. It's not a good sign. Before we go to break, lack of exercise. So when you're studying as graduate students, you should always be doing what? Minimum exercise is half hour, three times a week. Can you damage yourself if you exercise 6 hours a day for 7 days a week? So even exercise can be deadly. So it's moderation because you're wearing out biological tissues. What happens before exams, what happens to your blood pressure? Yeah, so you want to go mellow into any test. You become the pathology. You get stressed out. That's why I always went to go see a movie before an exam. Just relax. What's going to happen in 2 hours? 2 hours is not going to make a difference. Diet. If you eat pizza 3 times a day for 30 years. Homocysteine. Bacteria can get from your oral cavity into the bloodstream, can cause damage. All right. Let's take a break, come back, finish up this, and go on to the heart and look at some conditions. Any questions? This podcast was recorded by Dr. Henry Sanchez at the University of California, San Francisco.